We are in the throes of the holiday season, and while every family celebrates in their own way, some traditions are ever-present and downright odd when you stop to think about them. For instance, who is Santa Claus, and why do we expect him to come down the chimney with presents every year? For answers, let's bring in historians Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly. They're co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome. And Nathan, Christmas right around the corner. Let's start there. What are the origins of celebrating Christmas?
So Christmas is a holiday that we got around the 4th century when the church officially recognized December 25th as Christmas. And it's important to note that the date was not chosen because it was necessarily Jesus's birthday. We don't really know when that was, but actually was chosen to help crowd out what were pagan holidays competing for the attention of Roman subjects. And so what you have are the barren months of a time of year when things don't grow and there are difficulties in keeping people basically in charge of their bodily control. And so you need to have things that compete with fertility festivals and things.
Hold
that
on, Nathan. They did marketing back then?
No. But they certainly tried to find ways to keep the spring fertile, if you know what I mean. So the winter months were the time of year when a lot of different pagan followers were thinking about, multiplying, and the church needed to find a way to crowd that out by creating a Christian holiday for that time of year.
Okay, so the church was okay with that, to have these pagan traditions alongside Christian worship?
Well, you got to remember that people weren't just flocking to become Christian. So how did Christianity spread across Western Europe in this case? Well, it spread by compromising. They did not come in and clear-cut all the traditions, in the case of the Christmas tree and the Yule log. They adapted them and Christianized them, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And what about Santa Claus? Where did he come from?
Well, Santa Claus is based on St. Nicholas, who was the patron saint of kids in old Europe. But the real St. Nicholas could be nice to kids, but he could be pretty mean if you didn't do the right thing.
If you're naughty.
And, if you're naughty, exactly. Right. And what we've did in the United States, we kind of domesticated St. Nicholas and turned him into Santa Claus. A good example of doing that was the poem written by Clement Clark Moore. You probably know it, Jeremy. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. What happened to St. Nicholas as he was turned into Santa Claus in this poem is, rather than having a scepter, he got a bag. And in that bag were gifts. And that became the real centerpiece. Santa Claus had a red nose. Now, to a lot of urban middle-class dwellers, red nose meant drunk. But rather than having an old drunk coming down your chimney, it turned out this was a nice man bringing gifts.
And was he always a bearded white guy?
Yes, he always was a bearded guy.
Nathan?
They kept that.
No. I have to part with my colleague on this one. You know, the beautiful thing about Santa Claus and all of his many iterations, and this goes back to the very beginning when there are overlaps between, say, the Norse god Odin and his evergreen tree, right, and Santa Claus, you know, through the Middle Ages. But, you know, even in the United States, obviously we have ways in which Americans like to make things their own, and Santa Claus is certainly no exception. One of my favorite examples, in fact, is from the mid-1930s, where you have African Americans who are migrating from rural to urban America, oftentimes stopping at what are called, you know, transient camps for people who are working in the agricultural sector under the Works Progress Administration during the New Deal. And one of these camps was basically celebrating a festival in Richmond, Virginia, and they rolled out a black Santa. These African American kids booed the black Santa. They're like, Santa can't possibly be black. This is totally fake. And it was used by the black press as an example of how white traditions were effectively taking over African American sensibilities. And this concern about children wound up animating a whole host of debates that ultimately helped to dismantle segregation. So Christmas still had its politics, and they were totally wrapped up in Santa's white beard.
Okay, well, there's the story of Christmas, at least what we're going to hear in a few minutes on Here and Now. But let's talk about some of the other big holidays this season. Kwanzaa. Nathan, it starts next week on December 26th. What is Kwanzaa's origin story?
Well, similarly, it's about, you know, folks trying to make part of the Christmas season their own. Kwanzaa was started in the 1960s when it was a hotbed time of black nationalist sentiment. The activist and thinker Maulana Karenga in 1966 celebrates the first Kwanzaa celebration, and it's meant to try to build a sense of community through principles like unity and self-determination, collective work and responsibility, even cooperative economics and creativity. And the seven principles of Kwanzaa are in part not there to replace Christmas, but to try to take some of the commercial aspects out of Christmas and also to challenge, again, some of the iconography that might not be fully representative of the diversity that is in the country at the time. And I've been to Kwanzaa celebrations. I've actually celebrated in my own home once or twice. And, you know, it is the kind of thing that helps you to slow down, even if you don't necessarily, you know, speak Swahili, for instance, which is how many of the principles are translated. It provides a different counterpoint to a holiday that can oftentimes be overshadowed by consumerism and the like.
Okay, and let's talk about Hanukkah, which is a huge holiday that just ended. How did it evolve in mainstream American culture?
Well, again, similarly, it coexists with Christmas. But again, I think it's important to recognize that even within the broader Jewish community around the world, Hanukkah is not, one would say, on par with Christmas in the way that it is, say, in the United States. It really is a kind of companion holiday to the Christmas season. And it's a way of folding Jewish Americans into the broader calendar and the social fabric. And of course, pop culture reflects this in things like, say, Hanukkah Harry on Saturday Night Live or other ways in which the dominant culture has to incorporate or account for Hanukkah's presence.
And Jeremy, I think you don't know this, but I think Nathan does. For a period in our family's history, we were celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa, because I'm Jewish, my wife has Protestant heritage, and my kids are African American. So, boy, did they get a lot of gifts.
Well, that brings us to one big part of it that I want to know about, which is consumerism. At this point, the whole holiday season is all about making as much money as possible for so many retailers out there. When did that happen? Why did it become like that, Brian?
It happened earlier than you might guess. It really happened in the middle of the 19th century. And to understand this, you have to go back to where Nathan started. Those pagan traditions were all based on something that social scientists call an inversion. The way to explain that simply is people traded places for the day. Rich people pretended they were poor. Men pretended they were women. And try as they might, and the Puritans literally banned Christmas for 20 years in Massachusetts, try as they might, they couldn't completely eradicate that tradition of inversion, kind of a wild carnival-like holiday that continued all the way into the 19th century. But as America began to build big cities, as it industrialized, these working class people who were knocking on the doors of rich people demanding gifts, demanding to trade places for a day, became kind of scary. Mm. That's why old, jolly, friendly Saint Nick, Santa Claus coming down the chimney, needed to be turned into a friendly guy carrying gifts that could be distributed within families themselves rather than across social classes. And so that gift giving was very important for domesticating Christmas, for turning it into something that could be celebrated around the hearth of middle class homes in a much more orderly fashion than strangers knocking on your door in New York City.
With a red and white Starbucks cup that starts right after Halloween.
Well, this is exactly the thing, right? I mean, we still look to the so-called barren season for growth in the same way many of the ancient celebrants of Christmas did. And it's, again, one of these things that connects us all the way back. And, you know, the American economy is expected to have its sharpest growth during this time of year, right, when people are buying gifts and entertainment and paying for airplane tickets. So the idea is that we expect Christmas to kind of do that work to help us all prosper, even if we're not entirely sure of the ancient connections.
We didn't get to Festivus on this history of the holidays, but we'll do that next year. The feats of strength and the airing of grievances are very important traditions as well. Nathan Connolly and Brian Ballow, hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.